So, yesterday I began by talking about Rasaraj, and he's sitting right in front of me. So, yes, Krishna is Rasaraj. In the Sanskrit language, there's so many beautiful words, and rasa is one of those beautiful words. Rasa, you cannot actually translate into English appropriately. There could be many words: mellow, relationship, juice, nectar, relish. There could be many words to describe what the word rasa means. But Krishna is known as Rasaraj, the king of all mellows, the king of all relationships. Thank you, Guru. Krishna has many, many other names. Yes, he's known as Rasaraj. He's also known as Rasanath. He's also known as Rasika Shekhar. He's also known as Rasika Raj. Krishna is Rasovesaha. He's the reservoir of all rasa. And Rupa Goswami, who's the Rasacharya, says that Krishna is Akila Rasamrita Murti. He's the form which is the complete embodiment of all relationships. So Krishna is greedy to experience rasa. When Krishna is in the form of Vishnu in the spiritual world, then Vishnu develops a greed. How can the Lord be greedy? Yes, greed, ultimately everything has its origin in the Supreme Lord. So Vishnu becomes greedy. He becomes greedy to do what? He becomes greedy to experience virya rasa, the fight, the battle with his devotees, a play fight. Just like you have in the material world, like you want to do an arm wrestle with someone. I mean, that's the lower end of the scale. And then it goes all the way up to things like MMA and all that kind of thing. But yes, that is also a rasa, a play fight. So Vishnu develops the greed to want to fight and experience that rasa. So then what does he do? He makes a whole arrangement whereby his doorkeepers, Jay and Vijay, become cursed by the Kumaras. And then that Jay and Vijay, they come to the material world as different demons. So they descend in the Satya Yuga as Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. So then that Vishnu who wants to experience, play fight, then that Vishnu comes to the world as Nrisingadev. And Nrisingadev takes Hiranyakashipu on his lap and rips him apart. Once they had the picture of Nrisingadev and you know killing Hiranyakashipu, and they showed it to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, "Very good, more blood, more blood." it's intense, you know. So the Lord comes as Nrisingadev and experiences that. Yes, he experiences the play fight. He experiences what it's like to protect his devotees. But then as Nrisingadev, the Lord develops another greed. He was greedy as Vishnu. Now he's greedy as Nrisingadev. He becomes greedy as Nrisingadev that Prahlad experienced what it's like to be under protection. Prahlad experienced what it's like to have a loving, protecting father. So I would also like to experience what it's like to have a loving, protecting father. So after the Lord appears in Satya Yuga as Nrisingadev, then in Treta Yuga the Lord appears as Lord Ram. And as Lord Ram, he has a very wonderful father, a very loving father, a father that loves him so much that when he goes into exile, he cannot maintain his life. And so as Lord Ram, the Lord experiences the Vatsalya Bhav from the perspective of being a son. But then as Lord Ram, the Lord also develops a greed as Lord Ram. Yes, I've experienced now fighting. Yes, I've experienced Vatsalya Ras. I've even experienced Sakya and Madhurya as well. But the Sakya that I experienced, the friendship, everyone was always seeing me as the older brother. And the Madhurya, the conjugal relationship that I experienced with Sita Devi was very nice, but now I want to experience Sakya Bhav, in which I am the junior. And I want to experience Madhurya Bhav, not where I'm married, but where I'm unmarried, and connecting with my internal energy in that rasa. So as Lord Ram, the Lord develops this greed. So then after appearing in the Treta Yuga as Ram, then the Lord appears in Dwapara Yuga as Krishna. And as Krishna, Krishna fights, doesn't he? Krishna also has loving relationship with his parents, but Krishna also has Sakya Bhav, where he is taken as a junior, isn't it? They defeat Krishna in wrestling, in Ramanreti, in the white sands. And then because Krishna lost, then he has to carry the other gopas on his shoulder all the way home. So they take him like that. And Krishna experienced Parakya Bhav, isn't it? The conjugal relationship, but not in wedlock, but as a paramour, which involves more risk, more intrigue, more secrecy and confidentiality, more anticipation, and which includes more separation, and which is therefore a much more intense type of love. But then when the Lord comes as Krishna, or when Krishna comes as the Lord, depends on where you want to put it. Then Krishna also develops a greed. Krishna says, I experience all the rasas, but one rasa I did not experience is the rasa of being a devotee. I experienced everything else, but I did not experience what it feels like to be a devotee. And specifically, the devotee whose happiness exceeds my happiness by 10 million times. Therefore, A Mata Bhakta Bhava Koriyangi Kar Apaniyachari Bhakti Korila Pracharta. A Mata Bhakta Bhav, I will come to the world in the Bhakta Bhav. And what is the ultimate Bhakta Bhav? Radha Bhava Dyuti Suvalitam Krishna Nomi Swarupam. I want to come in the Bhakta Bhav, and what's the ultimate Bhakta Bhav? Radha Bhav, the mood of Srimati Radharani, who loves Krishna like no one else can love Krishna. So that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He comes as the Lord again in Kali Yuga to experience what it's like to be in the position of a devotee. And so we hear this, but this is incredible. One commentator, he says, if you find a religion in which the devotee cries for God, then you can understand this is very deep. But if you find a religion in which God cries for the devotee, you can understand this is even more deep. But if you find a theology in which God becomes a devotee to cry for himself, then you can understand that's out of this world. This is the theology of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is the theology of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. When we hear the word Gaudiya, we generally think it to mean, Gaudiya means those Vaishnavas coming from Gaudadesh, Bengal, because Gauda is the land of Mahaprabhu. But it's said that Gaudiya has a double meaning. Gaudiya also comes from the word Gaud. And Gaud, as we know, is very, very... And therefore, the Gaudiya Sampradaya is not just the Sampradaya that comes from Gaudadesh, but the Gaudiya Sampradaya is the Sampradaya in which the sweetness of love, Madhurya Prem, the icing on the cake, is given in its most accessible form. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life is so amazing that so many biographies are written of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life. Anyone know how many biographies were written of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? 27 biographies of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were written, and some were written in Bengali, some were written in Sanskrit, some were written in Odia, and we don't have access to all of them, but all the biographies written of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it said that the Chaitanya Charitamrita is the final word. This is the most authoritative account of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life, because it fully brings out all of the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it fully brings out the internal mood and most confidential heart of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada said, is the original Bengali suite. So that's very, very nice. And Chaitanya Charitamrita has 11,000 verses. Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was once in Assam. And there, you know, there is a... Obviously, as we know, in a lot of the eastern regions, there's always the threat of floods. So at that time when he was lecturing, there was a big monsoon time floods. And then one day he was speaking to the devotees and he said, if there would be a flood tomorrow, and you could only take three books with you, which ones would you take? So naturally everyone said Gita, Bhagavatam, Sisi. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, but if the waters went a little higher and you had to drop one of them, which one would you drop? He said, drop the Gita. And he said, if the waters would go even higher and you needed to drop one more book and only carry one, which one would you carry? And they said, carry the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because the Chaitanya Charitamrita, not only does it give the most elevated understanding of Krishna's mind and heart, but also what the Chaitanya Charitamrita does is it includes the essence of all other scriptures. So Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami in the Chaitanya Charitamrita has also quoted the most important Gita verses, the most important Bhagavatam verses, the most important verses from Goswami literature. So, they sometimes say that if the Bhagavatam establishes the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Krishna, isn't it? Ete chamsha kala pumsha Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam. So the Bhagavatam establishes that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna. The Chaitanya Charitamrita establishes the Supreme Personality of Krishna. Because Krishna also has many different personalities. So the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Goswamis, they teach us what is the Supreme Personality of Krishna. Every literature is having a Paribhasa Sutra. A Paribhasa Sutra means one verse which is considered the most important. Jiva Goswami says the Paribhasa Sutra is like the commander of an army. It's the verse which comes first. And when that verse comes, all other verses come behind it in order to support that verse. So the Gita has a Paribhasa Sutra. Manmana bhava mad bhakto. You all know this verse. The Bhagavatam has a Paribhasa Sutra. Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam. The Brahma Samhita has a Paribhasa Sutra. Ishvara Paramakrishna Sachitananda Vigraha. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita also has a Paribhasa Sutra.
And the Paribhasa Sutra is the fourth verse of the literature. Is this Samarpayitam munat prajala rasam svabhakti shriyam Hari purata sundara dyuti kadamba sandipita sada hridaya kandare spuratu bhava sachinandana. So this verse this verse is said to be the Paribhasa Sutra of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So I'll just read the translation.
May the Supreme Lord, who is known as the son of Srimati Sachi Devi, be transcendentally situated in the innermost chambers of your heart. Resplendent with the radiance of molten gold, he has appeared in the age of Kali by his causeless mercy to bestow what no incarnation has ever offered before. The most sublime and radiant mellow of devotional service, the mellow of conjugal love. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he comes as Karuna Avatar. Once Ram was with Sita in the Dandakaranya forest, and as we know, when Ram went to the Dandakaranya forest in exile, then he was being attacked left, right and center. And when he was being attacked left, right and center, he was also killing left, right and center. And so one day Sita Devi came to Ram and said, "You're killing all these demons. There's so much violence. There's so much bloodshed. My one plea to you is that in the next incarnation, no weapons. I don't want to see any of these things." So Ram said, "Of course, no problem. I will acquiesce." Then in the next incarnation, the Lord came as Krishna and Sita Devi came as Radharani. And as we know, Krishna was also killing many demons. One demon every day before lunch. So Krishna was killing so many demons. So one day Radharani came to Krishna in Vrindavan and said, You promised, you said, no weapons, no. Krishna said, "I said no weapons. I'm not using any weapons. I'm just killing the demons, but I'm not using any weapons." So Radharani said, no, I wanted no violence. Krishna said, "But as Ram, I said no weapons." So now here, I'm in Vrindavan, just in my Madhurya form, my sweet form, I'm killing the demons. And so Radharani said, "It's useless, Krishna. You will never be able to give up your violence against the demons. Therefore, in the next incarnation, I'll have to enter your heart. I'll enter your heart. And when I enter your heart, because Radharani is Karunamayi, she is the embodiment of compassion. So when Karunamayi enters Krishna's heart, then Krishna assumes the form of the Karuna Avatar. And what does Krishna do as the Karuna Avatar? Anarpita, that which was not given for a long time, samarpita. Krishna gives it fully. Krishna gives it freely. Krishna gives it without discrimination. Therefore it said, patra patra vichar nahi nahi sthan sthan. Je jane paye tane kare prema dhan. That when Mahaprabhu came to this world, then he did not consider this place or that place, this person or that person. Everyone gets the mercy. So this verse explains how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come as Karuna Avatar. He's come to give the mercy. In his commentary on this verse, Jiva Goswami raises a question. He says, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to give the mercy, but why are we not experiencing the mercy? When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was here in this world, he would just touch someone. Someone would just see him and they would go into ecstasy. That was live wire. So Jiva Goswami says, why is it that we are not experiencing the mercy, the kripa, the karuna of the Karuna Avatar, if he's giving it so freely? And Jiva Goswami basically gives three reasons. Jiva Goswami says, we are, the problem is not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the problem is us. And he says, the problem is we are kapat. What does a kapat mean? A cheater. It means someone who's duplicitous. It means someone who's crooked. It means someone who says one thing but does another thing. It means someone who presents themselves in a certain way but thinks something very, very different. So he says that the problem is that we are crooked. And he says there are three types of crookedness which are blocking one from the mercy, receiving the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he says the three types of crookedness is that some people are dhan kapat, some people are bal kapat, and some are prem kapat. These are the three types of crookedness that will block one from receiving the full mercy of Mahaprabhu. The first thing he says that some people are dhan kapat, which means that Krishna has given them so much in their life, given them so much facilities, so much possessions, so much wealth, so much different things which allow us to live in this world. But then what one does in one miserly, in a miserly way, holds on to that and does not wholeheartedly offer it in the service of the Lord. One is withholding the things that they've been given by the grace of God. And the more that one is able to wholeheartedly give without consideration of return, the more one is able to be generous, magnanimous, open-hearted, the more one is able to just serve without any calculation of, you know, I lose this, then one becomes more qualified, more of a receptacle of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. So Jiva Goswami says the first problem is dhan kapat. But then he says there are many people who are giving everything. They're giving what they have. They're giving so generously to Krishna. They're giving their possessions. They're giving their wealth. They're giving in a very open-hearted way. But then he says they may be bal kapat. And bal kapat means they're not giving their energy, they're not giving their time, they're not giving a full endeavor, they're not making a complete effort. They're not making a complete endeavor. So Krishna has not just given us facilities, but Krishna has also given us prana, life energy. And let's face it, sometimes we wake up in the morning and we just feel a little bit lazy. And so we know, in any given day, we can know, I'm in first gear, I'm in third gear, I'm cruising. Where are we? Which gear are you functioning in? Jiva Goswami says, if you withhold your life energy, if you withhold your effort and endeavor to try to connect Krishna, then you'll miss out on the mercy. So someone may be not be a dhan kapat, they're giving everything, but then they may withhold their bala, or the strength that they've been given by Krishna's mercy. But then Jiva Goswami says, someone may not be a dhan kapat, they may be giving everything they have. They may not even be a bal kapat. They may be very busily engaged for Krishna, running around, doing so many things. But they may be prem kapat, which means they're doing so many things, but they're not doing it with their heart. They're doing it mechanically. They're doing it as a duty. They're doing it because they feel an obligation. But who is that person who is giving their dhan, their bal, with prema, with their heart, with love? Because they really want to. Because they don't serve because there's a need. Their need is to serve. This is the difference in Vrindavan consciousness. Here we are serving because there's a need. But then it comes to the point where your need is to serve. Because without service, what is the meaning of life? Where is the rasa? Where is the anand? So on commenting on this verse, in which Kaviraj Goswami is explaining how the Lord is coming to this world to give so much mercy, Jiva Goswami reminds us that we have to give whatever we have in our possession. We also have to give our energy and effort, and ultimately we also have to give our heart. And for one who is able to do these things, then they will very, very quickly feel the unlimited mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sometimes we look at this world and it is so difficult. Practicing spiritual life is so difficult. Sometimes devotees get into Kali Yuga Katha. Oh, it's so bad. It's terrible. It's Kali Yuga. It's Kali. One time devotees were talking like this, Kali Yuga, Kali Yuga. And then one sannyasi said, it's not Kali Yuga. This is Chaitanya Yuga. So are you seeing it as Kali Yuga or are you seeing it as Chaitanya Yuga? Because Bodhananda Saraswati says, Kala Kalir Balina Indriya Vairi Varga Shri Bhakti Marga Ihakantaka Koti Ruddha Ha Ha Kwayami Vikalam Kimaham Karomi Chaitanya Chandra Yadinadya Kipam Karushi. He says, Kala Kalir, I'm living in Kali Yuga. Balina Indriya Vairi Varga, and my senses are wild. Shri Bhakti Marg, this beautiful path of bhakti, Iha Kantaka Koti Ruddha, is spiked with so many thorns. So he says, problem number one, I'm living in Kali Yuga. Problem number two, my senses are completely impetuous. Problem number three, this beautiful path of bhakti is spiked with so many thorns. So then he looks up and he says, Ha ha, kwayami, kimaham karomi, what will I do? How will I make it? What is the hope? And then he says, Chaitanya Chandra Yadi Nadya Kripam Karoshi. I'm looking at Mahaprabhu and I'm just praying that if he showers me with his mercy, then everything can be resolved. So it's a great opportunity. In Krishna consciousness, we're just trying to qualify ourselves for mercy. That's actually what we're doing. By our own endeavor, we will not make it. But by our own endeavor, we're simply trying to qualify ourselves for the mercy. And then that mercy makes everything up. So perhaps I'll pause here. As we discuss some of these points and see whether you may have any comments, corrections, or questions in regard to any of these things we've talked about so far. Interesting. Yes, okay.
Because we've got this cheating propensity here. In, especially in Kali Yuga, it's the age of hypocrisy. And I am a hypocrite myself, you know, I admit it. But at the same time, I'm better to be an honest hypocrite than a dishonest Brahmin. The other thing is, though, seriously...
Can I just say something on that?
Yeah.
Okay, and then I'll leave. It's explained that there are four defects of the conditioned soul. And one way to see the four defects of the conditioned soul is you can see them in an order. That The first defect of the conditioned soul is that we're imperfect. We have imperfect senses. Because we have imperfect senses, the second defect of the conditioned soul is that we have a tendency to be an illusion. Because we have a tendency to be an illusion, we may commit mistakes. And because we commit mistakes, we end up cheating. Now it's interesting when you look at it like this, because the first three, you have no power over to some extent. You're imperfect, is the way we're wired. Because you're imperfect, Maya is strong, you can be overcome by illusion, sometimes not much you can do about that. And because you're under illusion, you're likely to commit mistakes. To be honest, to err is human. But the one thing we do have control over is that when we make mistakes, are we going to cheat? This is the one defect of the conditioned soul that we can still very much influence. Am I going to be a cheater? Am I going to be crooked? Am I going to be duplicitous? Therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, in spiritual life, weakness is not a problem, but cheating is a problem. And therefore, if we want to embrace purity, before purity can come about, there must be honesty. And therefore, this is also another reason why in Kali Yuga, there's only one leg of religion remaining, which is what? Because yes, you don't have austerity, you don't have cleanliness, you don't have mercy. But if you're truthful, if you're honest, if you're open and vulnerable in your difficulty, then from that honesty, everything can be recreated, because Mahaprabhu knows we're weak. So, yes, just to build on that. Yes.
So, this is the age of hypocrisy and quarrel. And we are all affected by it in different ways. But the Chaitanya Charitamrita does, I forget where it is, but it does give us a little sort of a guide to go introspective. Prabhupada said that the devotee is as introspective as a non-devotee is speculative. So to be more introspective, there is the verse regarding the upasakas, those six upasakas, that severely affect our standing as a potential Krishna Bhakta and as an influential Krishna Bhakta. So I thought maybe you'd like to share that and talk about that a little.
Yeah. Anyone have a Veda base on there?
I know the shloka. I can give you the shloka.
Okay, just tell me the first
one. Nishidachar,
Kutinati, Jiva Himsana, Lava Puja Pratistadi, Jata Upashaka Gan. Okay, so. So these are when in the Chaitanya Charitamrita is explained that Brahmande Brahmite, we're going in this world for so many lifetimes, and then somehow Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij, you get the seed of devotion. And when you get the seed of devotion, then the next thing you have to do, Mali Hane Kare Se, Bija Arapan, Shravana Kirtana Jale, Koriye Se Chan. You have to become a gardener of your seed of devotion. And what do you have to do? You have to water that seed of devotion, Shravana Kirtana Jale, with the water of Shravana and Kirtan. And while you're doing that, you have to be careful. Yadi Vaishnava Parad, Ute Hati Mata. Be very careful that while you're growing your kripa, don't commit offenses. But then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in instructing Sanatana Goswami about this, explains that while you're growing your bhakti kripa, there can also be many other weeds that grow with it. And the weeds that grow with it are nisidachar, which means unclean behavior. Yeah, how is it exactly translated?
Activities opposed.
Activities opposed. Achar, which is not in line with your goal, which is not in line with pleasing Krishna. Habits which may remain, isn't it? Habits remain for a long time. They say habits. Even if you take away the H, still a bit remains. Even if you take the A away, still bit remains. And even if you take the B away, still it remains. Right? So habits like die hard. So still we, you know, it's amazing. After practicing spiritual life for so many years, still some bad habits which block. So nisijachar kuti nati, which means duplicity. Right? Duplicity, no? To present oneself in one way, and it's so wired within us to not be honest. When I was young, I wanted to be a cricketer. So what I used to do is, like, in the front living room, I used to like put this music loud, really high, and then like get all psyched up, and then I'd have a ball, and I'd throw it against the wall, and then I'd have a bat, and I'd like pretend I'm like hitting a six in the World Cup final or something. And then once I was doing this, and then I really middled the ball, like I really whacked it. And it went, the ball went flying around and it hit my mum's favourite vase. The vase came crashing down. And it made like the loudest noise. And so my mum came in and she just looked at the vase. I looked at the vase. And then she looked at me, and then I looked at her. And she said, "What happened?" And I said, "It broke." and then she looked at me and said, "It broke or you broke it?" And it was interesting because in that moment I realized even sometimes in the way we speak, it's like "it broke" as if it was its fault. Like "it broke," like couldn't do anything about it. "It broke," you know? And then in that moment, I just realized how, like, even in the way we act, our language, we're not honest. So this is the second weed that one should be very careful of. Jiva Himsana is the next weed, being violent towards other jivas. One may say, "I'm not a violent person, like, I don't, you know." Even we don't have any gross violence towards others, but sometimes in the way we sometimes speak of others, that is very violent. Once Arjun and Yudhisthira were having an argument, and it got so heated, the argument between them, that Yudhisthira said to Arjun, "You just put down your Gandiva bowl." And when he uttered that, everyone stopped. Because Arjun had made a vow that if anyone ever tells me to put my Gandiva bow down, I'll kill him. And you know what Kshatriya vows are like, right? The sun may stop shining, the mountains may move, the oceans may dry up, but I will never give up my word. So Arjun looked at Yudhisthira and said, "What, you told me to put my Gandiva bow down? I have to kill you." He's thinking, okay, this is it. I have to kill my older brother, Yudhisthira, Dharmaraj. So then somehow or other Krishna just appeared to save the day. He goes, no. "You don't have to do it. You don't have to do it. There's different ways in which you can kill someone. One is by act, but another way is by words. And if you criticize someone, it's as good as killing them." And so Arjun just began criticizing Yudhisthira. And then Krishna said, okay, enough. You killed him. You killed him. It's done. And then Arjun felt so bad. So he said, "I've said so many bad things about Yudhisthira. Now how will I atone for my offense? I have to kill myself." Krishna was like, "My God, it's one of those days, huh?" He's trying to kill him, then he's trying to kill himself. I can't relax. So Krishna said, "No, there's different ways to kill yourself. One is by physical suicide, but he says another way to kill yourself is by words, by praising yourself. If one praises themselves in public, it's as good as killing yourself. So, jiva himsana means violence towards others. There are many ways in which we could be violent towards others.
I just remembered Bhaktisiddhanta also said that jiva himsa means obstructing another person's devotional service. Just remember.
Yes. Obstructing another person's devotional service, and also Prabhupada in his commentary says also non-violence means that one should preach Krishna consciousness. In other words, if we have been given something which we know is going to get people out of here and we don't do anything. I remember when I first went out on Sankirtan, the Sankirtan leader said, when you see people on the street, in your mind you should think this person's about to walk off a cliff. There's some meditation, you know. I mean, if someone is there about to walk off a cliff, you're not just gonna like stand by and do nothing, right? You know. He said you should feel like that you know there's a need to give. So yes, jiva himsana, and then jiva himsana labha.
Profiteering,
greed, to try to gain.
To
try to gain something from spiritual life. Taranga rangini, to ride the waves. Like when you're in spiritual life, you benefit from so many things. So instead of using that for Krishna's service, then you try to for your own profit. And then puja, to want respect, to want honor, to want fame, to want distinction. Pratistha.
It's a Korean
So these are the things we have to be careful of, because what often happens is when we come to Krishna consciousness, we may not... Less people leave Krishna consciousness in a very gross way, like completely give it up. Few people that may happen, but generally the philosophy is too amazing, the process is too amazing, the Vaishnava Sangha is too amazing. Very few will just leave completely like that. But what will happen to most, or many, is that we will be in, but not really be able to go deep to the depths, because these other weeds are choking the real creeper of devotion. So yeah, thank you for raising this to add to the discussion. Yes.
I have a question regarding to the point that you were making about criticizing others. This is, I think, one common problem that we face. We may not criticize others ourselves, but there are many people who come to us all the day around, say even in material life, trying to criticize others. Oh, this person did this to me, that person is, you know, so bad and all.
Oh,
that.
You're hearing them criticize someone else.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
But at that time, we won't be thinking very good about the third person that they are trying to tell us about. And sometimes they are the person who's coming in wanting to criticize in front of us would be a friend of ours, most of the time. That's why they chose us to come in. So it's very rude or difficult at that moment to say, no, I'm a bhakta, I cannot hear all this. You please keep quiet. We cannot really say at that time. So what should be our mood at that time? I mean, because it's a common situation that I face with it. We won't want to criticize, but somebody else, one of our friends, would want to come.
You're saying another devotee or non-devotee?
Both cases. Most commonly, non-devotees, but...
Yes, whatever, you know, like, it's amazing, like, there's something called an anchoring bias, and it means whatever we hear first always has a greater impression on us than what we hear later on. So when you hear things about people, even sometimes people you never met or you don't even know, and you hear something, it doesn't matter, like, how true that is, just by hearing it, it creates a bias within you that's sometimes very difficult to change your vision of someone.
Therefore, yes, we must be very, very careful what we hear. Well, there are a few things you can do. Number one is, obviously, if you can not hear it and leave the place, and somehow that's the best. If you cannot do that, and it would be rude to do that, then what you can try to do is reframe the conversation in a positive way. So for example, if someone is complaining about something or some situation, you know, you ask, what could we learn from this situation? How could we improve? How, you know, you try to bring some positivity into the equation. Like, they would come to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in the ashram, in the math, and two brahmacharis would be arguing. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say, okay, I'll hear your complaint about the other, but first, say three good things about him. First say, and then I listen. And then after that, whatever you want to say. And when they would begin that whole process, then after they would think, okay, there was some, not so much. Okay, no, we don't have a complaint, it's okay. So you try to bring some positivity. Try to allow that person to frame their conception within the bigger picture of what may be good in that situation. And we have to become expert at doing that. Sometimes we don't want to outright tell them, this is offensive, I don't want to listen to it, I don't want to be part of this. We may not have that relationship where we can outright say that. But what we can do is try to elevate the discourse by bringing positivity. And then, if you cannot do that, if somehow you have to hear it, then ultimately then we just have to have a very prayerful mood and be very deep in our own sadhana and be very mature to understand that in anyone, anything says in this world, there are always many perspectives, there's always a hidden story. So I would be foolish just on what one person's saying to then have a conception in my mind of the person they're talking about. So we should have that maturity to know. So yeah, but it's very difficult. So we should be scared. We don't want to hear these things. Life's too short. When we spend our whole life in criticism, complaining, comparing, there's much more important things to do. So yeah, but it's nice. It's already a good sign that you don't want to hear it. If it's not our service and if we can't do anything to improve the situation, then better not to hear all of these things. Yeah. Our mind is crazy enough. Yes.
I just remembered another thing.
Yeah.
To your question. That 90%, I'd say 70 to 90% of fault finding is actually projectionism. It's a psychological topic that, and it's there in our shastras as well, the shloka Atmavan. So a lot of our fault finding is our projection on someone else. Because some people, when people come to me, they say, oh, did you know this devotee? He's like, I said, you know, I don't really have met. I've known them for a long time, but I've never seen them like that. Maybe some of that is in you. It's projectionism. So that's the way I handle it myself. I try to help people think maybe some of that is it. And a lot of people are in denial. They say, no, it's not. I'm nothing like that. But they are seeing it. I'm not seeing it. So it must be in them to some degree. But a lot of the problem is our own self-denial. We deny so many things. So that's another point.
Yeah, definitely.
I remember Buddha Bhangpa was speaking on this, and he said how a serious and sincere devotee will learn the good from the example that devotee set, and then also will learn from when someone doesn't set a good example, we can still learn from that. I remember in one of your classes, you mentioned there's a pastime when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was walking, and there was someone in the Ganga said that, you know, why don't you do something practical, could you please share that? That was really nice.
Yeah, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would all every day walk down to the Jalangi, and as he would get to the boat, then there would be one person and he was criticizing. Oh, you sadhus, why you do something practical? You know, just parasites, you're just lounging around, you know, this, you know, living off society. Like, so he was criticizing in a very heavy way. So then one day Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur came, he was with me, and that man wasn't there somehow. So he turned to his disciples and said, where is he? Where is he? And the devotees were all happy. They said, yeah, Prabhupada, Maharaj here, Guru Maharaj here. He died, you know. In their mind they were thinking, yeah, he got the reaction, you know. So I think, yeah, he died. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, oh no, he died? He was my friend. He was your friend. He said, yeah, he was reminding me everything I should never become. He was reminding me, never become lazy, never become a parasite, never become a bogi, yogi, just living off society without actually giving something. So you see, many times, even in Mahaprabhu's Leela, isn't it, Ramachandra, Tuli comes. Oh, you eat so many sweets, I can see there's so many ants. Mahaprabhu reduces his eating. So yeah, there's always something to learn. Even when you hear criticism of someone else, you can also learn from that, oh, this person is reminding, whether that person's doing that or not, this person's reminding me that that's what I should not do. I should not be like that.
Learning from it.
Yeah. What if we praise ourselves indirectly? Can you give an example?
What was the question? Sorry.
She's saying, what if we praise ourselves indirectly? We can praise ourselves when we also share with the world that whatever we've been able to do is based on mercy and gifts that we've received from others that have allowed us to do this. Srila Prabhupada often praised the spreading of the Krishna consciousness movement and what had happened to share Krishna consciousness in every town and village. But Prabhupada always added on when he praised the Krishna consciousness movement that it's all of the mercy of my spiritual master. So we can be, yes, we can also be very proud that I've been able to do this or I've been able to achieve this for Krishna. Yes, a devotee can also say, but behind it they must know and they must also share with the world that my success, I was not self-made. It was because others helped me and empowered me. I don't know how long we're going. Anyone else have any questions? Or, yes.
Thank you for the class. Do you mind just clarify about the three types of, you know, three types of cheating that we can be, like the last one, being a prem kapur. It seems to me that when you're in that situation where you're doing everything, giving everything materially, that's my understanding of what that means. It seems to me that there's not really, it's not
what more can you do?
Yeah, like how do you transition or how do you progress from that? Because it seems to me that
You can give all of your dhana, your possessions, you can give all of your bala, your effort, but you can, in the process, become mechanical. You can become mechanical. You can do it as a ritual. It's amazing, like sometimes you meet people who have they're just so inspired in their life to, not inspired in life, that's not the right word. They just get into a routine of doing something that they can just do it for their whole life and it just becomes part of their life. But it's almost like they don't really do it with their heart, but it's just become so much of their routine that they just keep doing it. And so Krishna consciousness can become like that. It's like you almost just keep doing it because you don't know any other way to live, because it's just what you've been doing all of your life. But there's no real endeavor to do it with feeling or to do it with the heart or to add some more genuine personal connection with Krishna into the equation. So this is really what Jiva Goswami, and therefore yesterday I was speaking about how Hari Kirtan and Hari Katha have to go side by side. They have to be cultivated together. Because one can do Hari Kirtan, but what the Hari Katha does is that it helps you to understand the glory of Krishna's character, the sweetness of Krishna's qualities. And when you are more in touch with the personality of Krishna, then when you sing for Krishna or you glorify Krishna, it's more personal, it's more heartfelt, because you're connecting to Krishna as a person because you've heard about Krishna and his qualities. And so to avoid being a prema kapat, it means that in our spiritual practices, we have to try to bring some heart into it. There are many people who could work hard for Krishna. But working hard for Krishna is good, but it doesn't mean you're working with your heart for Krishna. There could still be someone who's working hard, but not working with the heart. Some people are just hard workers, but it doesn't mean they're doing it with their heart. Is that, I don't know if that helps.
Yes, it's not like I'm not like at that stage where I can realise that personally, but it seems to me like if you're in a situation like that, like, is there not some benefit that you're deriving? Or
Of course. Even if one is giving dhan but not bala, they're getting benefit. If one is giving dhan and bala, definitely they're getting benefit. And to some extent, we give the dhan and the bala, and we know that I can't just immediately open my heart up and give my heart to Krishna. How do you do that? You know, it's like, rip your heart open. No, how do you do that? So then you think, I just have to do this to some extent mechanically and hope that one day my heart will open up. But there also has to be a conscious endeavor to give your heart as well. So therefore, like Sarasvati Maharaj writes nicely in his book, that one should cry for Krishna. But if you can't cry for Krishna, then cry that you cannot cry for Krishna. And if you cannot cry that you cannot cry for Krishna, then cry that you cannot cry that you cannot cry for Krishna. In other words, somewhere along the line, try to bring your heart into it so it doesn't become mechanical. Because ultimately, it's a heartfelt process. But yes, it's not that overnight we're going to be able to just open the heart like that. But we should want to, and we should pray for that.
Any other questions? Anybody?
If you look at the 6th chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's all about Advaita Acharya. And Advaita Acharya is basically, in that chapter, if you read it, they're very beautiful verses, he glorifies Seva Bhav, because Advaita Acharya just wants to be a servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he basically explains how Seva Bhav, or the happiness, the bliss, the satisfaction, the complete contentment that comes from serving Krishna far outweighs any type of other ananda in this world. There is Jadananda, which is the happiness which comes from material things. Higher than that is Brahmananda, the happiness that comes from moksha.
Higher than that is Premananda, the happiness that comes from Prema. The Advaita Acharya says even higher than Premananda is Sevananda, the happiness that comes from Seva. So ultimately, by serving, we all get a glimpse when we serve of how satisfying it is, a different type of satisfaction. And basically, we have to experience that seva bhav and how beautiful it is more and more. And then seva becomes a necessity. Like a good example, like at the manor, we have Jiva Patipuru, who was disciple of Prabhupada, served the deities for many, many decades. And in his final days, he became very sick and he went to Watford General. So he was there and he was very, very sick. And then one devotee came one day and he saw Jiva Patipuru and then he was leaving. And as he was leaving, Jiva Patipuru said to him, he said, "The doctor came to me today. And he told me that there's a chance I can get out of the hospital. There's a chance I could get out of here and go back to the temple. But he told me that even if I'm able to go back to the temple, I won't be able to do my service." Okay. So his service was like, I think they did the statistics of his service. It was something phenomenal, like 8,000 Mangalaitis, 10,000 evening Aitis, like just completely dedicated to the deities, to Radha Gopalananda. So he looked at this devotee and he said, "They told me, even if I get out, I won't be able to do my service." And then the devotee said, he just looked at Jiva and it's like his head dropped. Anyway, the devotee left. Next day, Jiva Patipuru left his body. The very next day. And so the devotee had that realization, because he was in the hospital for many, many, many weeks. But the devotee had that realization that when he heard that I won't be able to do my service even if I get out of the hospital, he almost felt as though Jiva Patipuru just lost the will to live. It was like, if I can't serve, then what's the point of living? And because he lost the will to live, because he couldn't serve, then ultimately he just went. So that was very eye-opening, that it becomes the life breath of a devotee to serve. But that doesn't come overnight. We have to develop that. It has to come to that point very, very naturally. And we see, it's just the life breath of the mother to serve the child, isn't it? It's not like an extraneous effort. It's just, it's coming. The seva bhav is flowing. So at one point, the seva bhav for Krishna like that will flow. But it requires cultivation.
Thank you so much. Trying to understand devotional service. So there's 9 types of devotional services, and a lot of them are really for our own benefit, as you mentioned. So if we are serving with dhan, we're trying to do it for ourselves. If you call it Mangalarti, we're doing it for ourselves. If we are chanting, we're doing it for ourselves. So I mean, what should be the attitude for serving? Should we be serving just for ourselves? Or is it more important to serve where everybody benefits? Like this management services, you're trying to bring people together, do programs, things like that. So where should the energy be targeted? Just to benefit us on service or to benefit everybody?
When Mother Yashoda wanted to bind Krishna, then she was trying to bind Krishna with the rope, and as we know, it was too short. So then the next thing she did is she went all around Vrindavan and started knocking on all the houses and asked all the Brajabasis, "You also bring some rope, you also help me." And like this, there was a festival of ropes and she brought all the ropes together. And together, all of them tried to bind Krishna. Still, it was too short. But immediately after that, then Krishna resolved the situation.
So one of the acharyas commentates on this and says that if you try to bind Krishna alone, by your efforts, by your own spiritual practice, it will not be enough. But when you go around and you try to engage many others and you say, let us all come together, let us all join hands, let us all join forces and try to bind Krishna, try to capture Krishna, try to serve Krishna, then that is Sankirtan, Samyak Kirtan, and that is having a much more powerful impact. So yes, we get benefit when we come for Mangalarti. Yes, we get benefit when we offer a lamb. But when we bring someone else for Mangalarti, when we go to a home and encourage their whole family to offer a lamb to Krishna, when we take the anxiety to organize things so that many other people can benefit in their spiritual journey, then it becomes a much more powerful type of devotional service. So, some months ago, the Pandava Sena asked me to give a talk on taking anxiety for Krishna. And I kind of said to them, like, to be honest, I've got enough anxiety. I don't like wake up in the morning thinking today, how can I take more anxiety for Krishna? I have to be honest, I don't think like that. But what I do try to think of when I wake up in the morning is how can I take more responsibility for Krishna? But when you take responsibility, anxiety comes. So I said, actually, I don't go around looking for anxiety. I got enough. But I do go around looking to take responsibility. And if in the course of taking responsibility, anxiety comes, so be it. But that responsibility, it's amazing, all of these devotees who took a responsibility. And when we talk about responsibility, it doesn't necessarily have to be management. You just take a responsibility for some part of Srila Prabhupada's movement. Like Mother Kalangana, she took responsibility for Krishna's Mangalarti sweets. And she did it with her heart. And it was like Krishna's sweets. It was, in one sense, a small part of Prabhupada's movement, but such a beautiful part of Prabhupada's movement, and a part of Prabhupada's movement that was so pleasing to Krishna. And so she took it religiously as her responsibility that Krishna must get the sweets. Once there was one devotee in Vrindavan, Vibhu Chaitanya, who you may have heard his name, is disciple of Prabhupada. He was the only one disciple of Prabhupada who got the instruction that you don't have to chant 16 rounds. Because he was cooking all the offerings for the deities in Vrindavan. And Prabhupada said, all day you're engaged in service, you just chant, but you don't have to chant 16. So Prabhupada, special case. Anyway, he was cooking for the deities like that. At one point he got so sick that he could not cook anymore. And you know what service he took up in Vrindavan? You go at that time, you could have seen him. He took up the service of giving Charanamrit to every guest that came. So he would just sit there and just give Charanamrit. And I tell you, he did it with such devotion, with such, like, with his heart. He took responsibility that every guest must get Charanamrit. And so some of them said, this is such a small thing. But no, he took responsibility that this is. So, when Shri Dhammapuru left the world and Shivram Maharaj, he was saying some different things. And he said, we are trying to become devotees of Krishna, He said, but if there was ever such a thing in this world as a devotee of Bhaktivedanta Manor, Shri Dharma Prabhu would be that person. A devotee of Bhaktivedanta Manor. Because it's almost like he just took that as his responsibility, and every day when he woke up, that's what went through his veins. Like, what will I do to contribute to Srila Prabhupada's Bhaktivedanta Manor today? When Prabhupada saw Giriraj Maharaj, he said, Giriraj means Mumbai. Or Mumbai means Giriraj, one of the two, I can't remember. In other words, it became inseparable. So yes, we must take that responsibility, and then amazing things will manifest in my spiritual life, taking responsibility for Krishna. And when you take responsibility, yes, there's anxiety, there's headaches, there's criticism, there's difficulty, there's lack of cooperation. There's days when it feels like you're alone and there's no one else to help. But Krishna is always there and Prabhupada is always there. And Vaishnavas will always come to help. But we must remain determined and steadfast.
Yeah, I think I heard a class where Prabhupada said that don't be like a Krishna's employee, be his partner, like a business partner. Mm. And then you will get the anxiety, but then you will take more responsibility as well.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, the devotee was in Vrindavan, I can't, maybe it was Surabhi Prabhu, and he was, you know, construction in India or something. Fundraising, so many things. So he said, Prabhupada came once. He said, so I'm in Vrindavan, you know, everyone is all, you know, drowning in rasa, Radhe, Radhe, this person's doing kirtan, this, everyone's like in bliss, you know, and I'm just here thinking of numbers, you know, thinking of cement bags, thinking of like this worker is not pulling his weight. He said, Prabhupada, I'm fundraising every day and everyone is saying Radhe, Radhe, and I'm thinking rupee, rupee. Prabhupada said, first rupee, rupee, then Radhe, Radhe. In other words, we have to do how we will enter Vrindavan. You cannot just kick the door open to Vrindavan. We have to qualify ourselves. We talk about Gopi Bhav, but what is Gopi Bhav? Gopi Bhav means the complete willingness to put everything on the line, to take incredible risk for Krishna. This is Gopi Bhav. So it's not just a sentimental thing, it's a deep commitment to service, which qualifies one for the spiritual world.
Thank you so much,
everyone, for your association. Very nice to see you. Nice to see Sakya afterwards. I feel embarrassed as I've seen you.
Prabhu, that was a great speech. Thank you. But we also called it transcendental anxiety.
Yes. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna
Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki
jai,
Prabhupada ki
jai,
Swaminarayan ki
jai,
Gaur Premanand ki
jai,
Iskra Sukha Prabhu ki
jai.